Welcome to Community Conversations, a monthly program on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson, and this evening we're bringing you a panel discussion from this past April called Kill or No Kill, hosted by UMD's Center for Ethics and Public Policy. Shane Cortland, the center's director, says the goal is to assemble people who are passionate about important issues in the community, frequently who hold points of view that normally disagree with one another, and to have them share their experiences and positions. And that, says Cortland, accomplishes what he sees as one of the primary obligations of a university, to force you to look at another point of view different from your own. That being said, Cortland also emphasizes that this panel discussion was not about the end goal, caring for animals in animal shelters, but about the means. In order to understand tonight's discussion, there are a couple of terms you should be familiar with. In fact, much of the discussion revolved around the definition of a no-kill or kill animal shelter. Generally, a no-kill shelter is thought to be one that only euthanizes for severe medical or behavioral reasons, even when the shelter is full. A kill shelter, then, is often forced to euthanize based on duration of stay in order to have enough cage space available to accept all animals. Bound up in these definitions are two others that are crucial to understanding the conflict: open admission and limited admission shelters. Open admission shelters will accept all animals without restriction or appointment, but they can end up forced to euthanize animals to make room for those that are coming in. Limited admission shelters may restrict admissions based on the age or breed of the animal and also on available cage space, but they can also end up as long-time homes for animals no one adopts. Let's meet the panel. Janelle Dixon, president and CEO of the Animal Humane Society, an open admission shelter in the Twin Cities. She's involved on a national level with the National Federation of Humane Societies, Shelter Animals Count, and the Companion Animal Advisory Council for the Humane Society of the United States. Mike Fry is an animal advocate, public speaker, educator, and blogger, and he is an outspoken advocate of Nathan Winograd's no-kill equation. He was the executive director of Animal Ark, Minnesota's largest no-kill animal welfare organization. Betsy Bodie is the shelter programs manager for Animal Allies Humane Society here in Duluth. Animal Allies is an open admission shelter for strays and a limited admission shelter for surrender, but they focus their attention on the campaign for zero. Zero euthanasia of healthy, treatable pets, low-cost spay-neuter services, and humane education. Finally, Chris Maddox serves as a board member and manager of the Bully Breed program at Rough Start Rescue. Rough Start Rescue is one of the largest nonprofit no-kill rescue organizations in Minnesota, focused on saving stray, neglected, abandoned, and surrendered companion dogs and cats, as well as ferrets, guinea pigs, and rabbits. Here's Janelle Dixon.
I'm not here tonight to talk about the philosophy in terms of which one is better or worse or right or wrong, because I don't think that that's what this is about. But I do think that the term no kill is not reflective of the work and really serves to divide the animal welfare community. Expositions like this, and Shane called it kill versus no kill. Really what that does is, I'd say most, those of us sitting on the panel really have the same end goals and probably many of the same values. But what that does is serve to kind of position us off against one another. And really when we do that, the losers in that are animals. It's not my organization or Betsy's organization or Chris's organization. The animals in our community, because of the distraction that happens with the fighting about who's doing it right and who's doing it wrong and what's the better way and what's the worst way. And really there's room for multifaceted ways of delivering services for animals in our community. So the term no kill really implies no euthanasia, and we've talked about that a lot, but it's not so. I'm actually even aware of an organization that doesn't euthanize some animals. And so it's really been more, I think no kill serves as a marketing opportunity for organizations, as well as trying to describe what they are, but there really isn't a defined and agreed upon definition of what that is. And I agree with the other panelists that in the industry, generally, it's about a 90% live release rate, which means that's the percentage of animals that come into your shelter that are leaving alive. Animal Humane Society has a 92% live release rate. Yet I don't consider us to be no-kill, nor would I ever use that language to quantify what we do, because it so narrows the scope of the work to one definition of things, of something. So I'm one of the people that Mike will say, I believe that the term no-kill is very divisive. I am one of those people. It really does very little to instill collaboration or reach a common goal. You know, I'd say even tonight we've heard some things like put to death and destroyed. And again, I think that just serves to really undermine our own credibility as professionals in the field as compared to the work that really happens to try to save the lives of animals. So if singular focus on the outcome, euthanasia or life, so narrows the scope that it does a disservice to all that is accomplished in animal welfare and how that happens. It's not just about living, it's about quality of life. And Mike had some photos up of a dog being euthanized. I can guarantee that's not what euthanasia looks like in Animal Humane Society. I could put horror pictures up there too. I don't think that that's useful here. There are animals who squander their lives away in some no-kill facilities for years. The situation they live in is deplorable. Is that better than being euthanized? That's for each of us to decide, but I think it's a question that really needs to be asked. Quality of life as compared to just simply living. So no-kill for me is essentially limited admission. Conversely, open admission is a philosophy that's founded in the belief that we're there to help people and animals regardless of circumstance. There's no discrimination about service delivery based on age, breed, health, temperament of the animal, or simply maybe not believing they even deserve to get service. Open admission delivery is founded in belief that people are responsible and care about the animals that they're surrendering, that we as organizations need to have that capacity to care for the animals, a belief that a shelter is a temporary refuge, not a long-term or lifetime living environment, and understanding that all animals may not or should not be placed in the community because of health or behavioral issues, such as significant aggression. Limited admission, on the other hand, typically limits intake based on a set of criteria. That could be health, it could be breed, it could be behavior, a host of things. Additionally, space is often used as a determining factor about the ability to care for animals rather than the actual capacity in the form of money and staffing. So if you have 100 kennels in your facility, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can or should be caring for 100 animals. If you don't have the financial resources to pay for the staff and the medical care that they need, then maybe you should only have 75 in that facility. But often that's not what happens in no-kill facilities. Placement at all cost. Differing perspectives on health and safety regarding placement, usually more liberal than what an organization like mine might take. And long lengths of stay with instances of animals living in cages in the shelter for months and in some instances years. Now I'm using that as generalities. I'm not condemning no-kill shelters in terms of always doing that. There are instances of that and there are instances of that not happening. Just like some of the stuff that Mike shared, there are instances of that in open admission shelters and there are many instances like that not happening. So one of the things that happens is many no-kill facilities operate at maximum capacity. They often don't have space to take animals in. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I am saying if you have a community that's operating in only that way, you then have a community that can't really provide services to all the people and animals in that community that need services. So when an Oak Hill agency turns an animal away, they're still needed. Public and private open admission agencies fill that gap. In fact, an Oak Hill shelter in the metro area, when they were full, would refer clients to Animal Humane Society, but then would turn around and blame and attack Animal Humane Society for euthanizing animals. Kind of have your cake and eat it too. Euthanasia is really at the heart of this matter. Let's get a perspective on live release rate. That's the primary focus of Oak Hill. I mean, Oak Hill is often equated in the minds of you as individuals who have a limited view into what animal welfare is, and those of us in the industry, it equates to euthanasia. How many animals are being alive? How many animals are people euthanizing? So it's really one data point in all of the work that we do that is reflected as a percentage based on those animals that leave alive compared to the total number of animals that you brought into your facility to care for that year. That's an important fact, an important piece of information, but it's also flawed. It has weaknesses, it has biases, and it has limitations. And if we rate ourselves on the success of our organization based only on that, we are missing a huge piece of the picture. It loses all information of scale. If you have an organization with a 90% live release rate, and they take in 1,000 animals annually, they're adopting out and saving 900. If you have another organization that's got an 80% live release rate and they take in 20,000 animals annually, they're adopting out and saving 16,000 animals in that community. There's a scope and scale difference that gets lost and misunderstood when you have the context of talking about delivering animal well services for animals only from the perspective of no kill and live release. Achieving a high live release rate is not always a measure of a successful operation, because often what comes along with that is limited admission, no space for arrivals, and warehousing of difficult to place animals. So in closing, I would say the five freedoms really help to define, and I think is something no matter what we do in animal welfare, we all agree on. The freedom from thirst and hunger, the freedom from discomfort, the freedom from pain, injury, and disease, the freedom to express normal behavior, and the freedom from fear and distress. We, again, are a community of advocates and service providers, not individual service providers trying to do what's best for animals based on our one perspective and only thinking about our own success. We need to operate as a community of service providers that think about the success of our city, our county, our state, and even the country.
The heart of the no-kill movement that I've been part of for 20 years, one of our primary goals has been to reclaim that term, euthanasia, humane euthanasia, for its, you know, dictionary definition. It's not any time a shelter decides to, you know, end the life of a pet. And while it's great that Chanel's live release rate is now up to 92%, and it's great that everybody else here is doing well, technically, according to my definition, everybody at this table would be a no-kill advocate, no-kill organization, but we all know there are shelters that are not there. There are shelters that don't want to be there. There's shelters who don't care to be there. City of Memphis Animal Services, 4 employees charged and convicted of animal cruelty for engaging in dog fighting and all kinds of horrific things. And things like that going on in shelters all over the United States all the time. And if we forget that that's true and we think all shelters operate like the folks who are up here at this table, we're missing a big chunk of the picture.
I just have to dispute that, not that that particular situation happens, but I think when you take extreme situations and try to portray them as commonplace in the industry, that's also misleading. Certainly there are bad players in any business, any industry. Look at oil, look at government contractors, you name it. There are people who are not necessarily in it for the right reasons, or maybe something happened that that is influencing their behavior in a not so great way. But I could never sit here and say that people who work in animal welfare, for the most part, and I have to say this, 99%, 90%, are there because they want to be there, they want to make a difference, they have a strong belief in the mission of the organization.
I
think that the instance that Mike brought up is animal control. I don't want to demonize in any way animal control, but animal control is a city, county, governmental function, and granted, there are some people in those jobs based on the city's hiring policy that didn't come there to save animals' lives, but it is a career path for them. But I think it's more the exception than the rule. I think we want to be careful about generalizing that.
Well, I consult with animal shelters all over the United States, nonprofits, as well as animal control facilities. And I know there are municipal shelters and private shelters that have employees that are on work release from prison. You know, that's where they get their employee base from.
That doesn't mean you don't care about animals.
It does.
There are animal training programs in prisons that
we have a 50% kill rate in our animal shelters, Janelle.
We don't know that for sure.
That's source HSUS, ASPCA. If you've got better data than they have, I'd like to see it.
A reminder, we are all on the same side. So you can only imagine the difficulties in animal welfare, especially when you do work with shelters that aren't in the same place that we are. And I think I'd rather see the discussion, how can we help those shelters? I don't want to judge them for what they do, what they can't provide, but what can we do to help them? And there's a shelter we were recently trying to work with to transfer in animals. There's a cost of between $20 and $25 per dog to put them on a transport and relocate them. And the shelter wasn't able to do that because the $20 to $25 to put that animal on the transport was more than the cost to these parents. So, that's disturbing, but on the other hand, what can we do about?
There are so many people, and there are so many compassionate and passionate people, and so many organizations that support it. They all have a difficult time finding common ground, and if they were all to be able to come together and still have different perspectives, but find common ground, amazing things could happen. And so I think in those communities, in those areas, I would assume that's likely how it's coming together in all communities, but I see it on the rescue side. And I do believe that we have a very strong, healthy rescue community in Minnesota, and I'll speak specifically to these areas, but it is also very divisive, and it contradicts one another, and just the definition of kill, you know, kill fits organizations, be it AHS or MAX, and Animals Not Care Control, and foster-based rescues against one another. They all serve a purpose, and without one of them, it's going to be worse than it is. So we all serve a common good, we all can be better. Now let's all come together and figure out how we can support one another to make it better rather than worse.
Look, I appreciate the sentiment, but there's a part of me that seems that the conversation is sort of misleading. Because on one hand, if you're saying, we all have to be different, we have to accept our differences, you call yourself no-kill, that means you're divisive and bad. How do you not see that as somewhat hypocritical? If you want everybody to be open to your perspective, why can't you be open to the concept that some people like to call themselves no-kill because they actually believe there's a difference between killing and euthanizing? Why do you have to say, you're the bad people, you're being divisive, because you won't use words that I like?
So I don't have a problem with the term no-kill, but what I have a problem with is that there isn't a standard definition. So you can have a facility that says we're no-kill, they're not euthanizing, but they have animals stacked in crates from floor to ceiling. That's not, to me, a good alternative. So just by using the term no-kill, that to me doesn't say you're doing things right.
Well, of course, what you have to do is, but I think that if you look at the five freedoms, you got no freedom if you're dead. So all of them come following that. And all of your practice and policies at your shelter have to be predicated on, first, we're supposed to be the models of responsible pet care, the animal welfare movement. That's our job. We're supposed to stand up and model that. And if we can't, because we're killing 30%, 40%, I just did consulting with a shelter in California, killing 60%. You know, how can you stand up in your community as an animal control or nonprofit and say, we want you people out there in the public to be responsible for your pets, but once they show up at our place, this is what we're going to do with them. I don't think we can do that. It's our job to model responsible pet care that we want the public to follow. And if we're not doing that, we're not doing any part of our job. And all of those other practices, your shelter enrichment programs, getting your adoption programs turbocharged, all of them follow making sure that you're not killing pets you don't have to kill.
So, you know, we're having two conversations here. One is about euthanizing or not euthanizing. One is about the use of the term no kill. And my concern with this is it is misleading. People do believe. How many people in here thought it meant no euthanasia before we talked to you? Can you admit it? Yeah. Okay. So that's what people believe. That's not reality. It's not true. It leads to unrealistic expectation in the community that there will be no euthanasia.
But half of the reason for
the animal doesn't mean that you're not caring for them properly up to the point at which you have to make that choice to euthanize. It doesn't mean that you are not role modeling what you want to have happening in your community. And the reason that it's become more divisive is it used to be no kill, open admission, and now it's no kill, kill. Kill means to most of us a lethal intent to do harm with malice. That is not what anybody in a shelter is doing when they are euthanizing an animal. There is no intent to go to work that day and pick five dogs or 20 cats that I want to kill. It is about this animal has terminal cancer. That animal has bitten 3, 5, 10 people. Can't be placed. Yes, there are animals still in some circumstances that are healthy and treated and fully able to be placed that really, sadly, unfortunately, are still being euthanized. Transport is really helping with that. Betsy does transport, we do transport. We transport in nearly 7,000 animals from other shelters to save their lives on an annual basis. Spay neuter and the programs that Mike put up earlier are all a piece of getting to that. But there is not a miraculous overnight change from a point of where you're euthanizing 50% of your animals to you're euthanizing 10. It takes a lot of time. You can't stop euthanizing until you have in place low-cost spay neuter, trap neuter return, community release, behavior training programs, really good adoption programs, outreach in your community. Those things precede you reducing euthanasia. They do not follow.
The part, though, about that, I mean, I agree with virtually everything that she just said, much to my amazement, other than, but the one thing that I thought that I can't let go of, she started off by saying, how many of you believe no-kill means no euthanasia, and some of you raised your hand. But I think that proves my point, Janelle. But my point is, the humane movement has been blurring the lines between killing and euthanizing for generations. And you try to get a newspaper just doing a story on the killing in shelters to use the term kill rather than euthanize. They will privately say to you behind their back, no, I get it, I think it's the right word. But we've used the term euthanasia to mean anytime a shelter kills a pet, it's humane euthanasia, no matter what, period. And part of our movement is simply to clarify the difference between those two things. There's a difference between killing and ending the life of a perfectly healthy adoptable pet and ending the life of an animal with terminal cancer that's suffering.
It's well beyond that, though. It's not just about clarifying that difference. And I'd say, for me, I think there are two arms of no kill. There is an arm of no kill that is very collaborative. Chris's organization would be an example that works with all kinds of agencies, has good relationships, does not undermine others in the organization. And then there's an arm of no kill that I believe is led by Nathan Winograd that is divisive, fear-mongering, kind of ends justify the means, and really diminishes the ability of there to be trust in the community and really skewers people and organizations for any kind of euthanasia. So it doesn't even allow that topic to be a topic that can be honestly and openly talked about in a community because of what happens to people. And you used Austin as an example. Austin didn't get there easily to where they are. There are people in that community working in those facilities that are afraid to say anything because of what happens to them, personal attacks around them and the work they do, their families, their life choices. So that's a real problem. That's why I have a problem with the language, not the intent. I would love to see everybody at a 92, 95, 98% release rate and work with how we do that. That's why it's a community system of service delivery, not one by one by one, me being successful, but I don't care about you. And in terms of blurring the lines, you know, if you think euthanasia blurs the lines, no kill does too. Because no kill to people means no euthanasia. And it's really a little bit of euthanasia. It's some euthanasia. And that's not what people think. And that is, that's a blurring, that's equally challenging and undermining in the industry as what you would say.
Well, you know, I ran the Twin Cities' largest no-kill shelter for 14 years, and every year we did euthanize some pets. And whenever we euthanized a pet, we typically would blog about it, and we would put it on Facebook. And everybody knew exactly what was happening with those pets and why. And nobody ever seemed to be surprised about our no-kill shelter euthanizing terminally ill and suffering pets. That's the humane thing to do for those pets. That's the difference between killing and euthanizing, in my view. When you're doing it out of the animal's best interest, this animal's suffering. It's an act of mercy to end its life. If I'm consulting with an animal shelter where literally they take the animals in, they hold them for 7 days, and on the eighth day they're dead. No thought about anything. That's just their policy. And if their shelter is 3/4 empty, that still happens. I can't say it another way. There's a difference between those two acts. And I think it's very misleading to blur the lines between those two acts. We have to reclaim that.
So I go back to what Janelle was saying, why the word kill is offensive to some of us. And the word euthanasia is not about the reasons. The word euthanasia means quick death. It means providing the easiest death you can. But it's not about the intent and why you're doing it. So I don't think it's a bad word to use, especially when you're talking about lethal injection. That is euthanasia. And I would argue that lethal injection of a prisoner could also be considered quick death versus say, firing squad. The word kill, I couldn't go to work and get my coworkers to talk about them killing an animal, because every time we do perform an euthanasia, we talk about it. We're very open and honest with each other. We so carefully deliberate each of those animals' lives mean something to me. And I know you're not referring to animal allies, but just the constant vitriol of the word kill throwing at people, it's hurtful.
But I also think I'm going to be an outlier here, and I'm going to say this because you already see how divisive it is. But I question if there's any intentionalness behind how the terms came to be. I mean, personally, I think it's human nature. People don't want to know. So we call it humane euthanasia. So you think that it's always kind and it's gentle and it's peaceful and they're going to go to a better place. They were killed, be it humane or not. I mean, most of us knew how food got to your table. We would probably be vegetarian. We don't want to know. So we live in a gloomy slide. So I don't know if I knew that anything was intentional or not. I mean, I get the debate between kill and no kill, but the terms that we're using, I don't know. I mean, I will say that I used to always use euthanasia. When I talk about it now, and it's intentional, why it's not directed at an organization, it's more, frankly, from a marketing perspective. When people are asking me what will happen to this dog, say he will die, or he will be killed. I'm not getting into how, is it kill, no kill, is it by what means, but because I want them to be hit harder with the fact that you're not just seeing a dog, it's like, oh, somebody's going to take care of it, oh, it's going to be fine, no, you're going to ask me what happened to it. to it. If nobody steps up, he's going to die. So, because you need people to react. You need, again, I put my marketing hat on. You need people to react, and you need them to think about what's going to happen and not think somebody else is going to take care of it, or I want to be oblivious to what's going on.
Community Conversations is a monthly program here on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson. This evening, we heard part of a panel discussion called Kill or No Kill, hosted by the UMD Center for Ethics and Public Policy. Our thanks to Shane Cortland, the director of the center, Mary Olson Reed of UMD's Multimedia Hub, and the panelists, Janelle Dixon of Animal Humane Society in the Twin Cities, animal advocate and former director of Animal Ark, Mike Fry, Betsy Bodie of Animal Allies Humane Society in Duluth, and Chris Maddox of Rough Start Rescue. Community Conversations is produced by Lisa Johnson and funded by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.